Hey, good morning. Happy Monday. Happy Eclipse Day. Although, let's be honest, I'm in Western Washington and we only get 20%. And it's 100% clouds. So we're not even going to, it's going to look like any other day. I'm here with myself, John Hansman, and Emilio. And, whoa, all of a sudden I got a frog in my throat. Elise, who's our guest this morning. And we're gonna dive in and talk about some marketing. We love marketing. I think we have more marketing guests on our podcast than anyone else. Because let's be honest, if you're growing a business, you should be marketing. If you want to get bigger than you are, you can't just sit around and you have to keep your clients happy, but you've got to market to grow. So we spend a lot of time on marketing. How's your Monday, Elise?
Well, you know, I'm also in the Pacific Northwest, so there will be no total eclipse of the heart for me this morning or today. But I do, just in case, I have my glasses from the last eclipse in 2017. They're handy. They're right here. I don't think I'm going to need them, but I am prepared.
I left mine at home. And then I was looking at the clouds this morning. I was coming to work. And I could see a silhouette, like a blended silhouette of the sun. And I was like, yeah, I can't even see a circle. So I think we'll be fine.
I'm in Miami. So let's see what I get. Let's see what I see. I'll let you guys know.
Yeah, you're going to be definitely closer to it than we are. Like you're going to be more affected to it.
What's the percentage that you guys get in Miami?
I'm not sure. I was just looking it up while you guys were talking about it. I don't have that number, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I looked. So we had 20%. We also had there was another one semi-recent, I feel like, that was 70% or 80% that swiped us real quick. And it was like, was it a different eclipse? I don't remember. It wasn't even that long ago. There was an eclipse or something, but. I was around. I didn't go to Oregon. I almost went to Oregon for the total eclipse, and I'm kicking myself in the butt for not doing it. And I was here when we had 90, and that was pretty trippy. It was crazy just to see the leaves do that weird, I don't even know what it, like three-dimensional weird shade stuff. It was very crazy. So, well, Elise, thanks for being here. Excited to have you. Tell us a little bit. You have a lot of experience in marketing and TVs, you know, already all of that. Tell us a little bit about your background.
Sure. Yeah. I have a lot of experience despite the fact that I look so young and so youthful. I do have quite a bit of experience. I've been in traditional media basically my entire adult life. I got my start in a small newspaper where I grew up in a small town halfway between Seattle and Portland. And I worked there for probably 6 or 7 years. And then one day I woke up and I was just like, I can't be in this small town anymore. I got to get out of here. So I moved to Seattle and I started working for the Seattle Times. And I had just kind of fallen into the newspaper business by accident. I was really just in it for the high commissions as a single mom. Mm-hmm. And I have the gift of gab. I'm good at talking people into things. It's a natural gift. And so I was selling to all of the luxury automotive dealers on the east side of Seattle. And that was what I did when I was at the Seattle Times. I was there for a couple of years. Right around the time I was about 30 years old, I think. And then one day, I'm a girl that's been obsessed with magazines my whole life. Like when I was like 11, my bedroom wall was wallpapered in full pages out of magazines, both the ads and the editorials. I love it all. And so I was on Craigslist. Is Craigslist still around? I don't even know.
It still exists. Okay. I don't think anyone uses it except for... Yeah. Weird things.
Right. Sure. Okay. So I was on Craig, except for Craig. Good old Craig. Do you think he's hanging out with Tom from MySpace?
I think that's exactly where he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So I was cruising through Craigslist and I saw that there was a position hiring for Seattle Met Magazine. And I, growing up in a small town, I didn't know about city magazines. I only knew about the big national magazines. So I was like, oh, wow, I sell full pages in a newspaper. I could sell full pages in a magazine. I know that sounds super ditzy and blonde, but that's pretty much where I was at, right? And so I applied, and I basically got hired on the job or on the spot. And I just loved working at a lifestyle magazine because it brought all of my dreams together. Like, I love talking. I love selling things as long as it's products that I'm really passionate about. I can sell things I don't believe in, but I'm not that great at it because I'm not a very good liar. But I just loved everything that the lifestyle magazine. And at that time, this was like 2007, 2008, like city magazines were kind of really in their heyday, right? We were having parties. They were really glamorous. There were all kinds of like content coming out of them. And so I was there for close to a decade and worked my way into management. And the back half of my time there, I was actually the publisher of the magazine. And that got me really well networked in the greater Seattle area. And then a couple of hard life things happened in my household. I had emergency heart surgery at the age of 40. My son, who was 18 at the time, got diagnosed with Crohn's disease. And so I stepped away from the magazine to kind of like do a reset. I don't know what else you want to call it. Midlife crisis. I don't know what it was, but I took a little step away. And at that point I was like, wow, I could go anywhere. I could do anything. Because now my son is grown. I could go to New York. I could go to LA, you know, where all the other big magazines are. But then I realized I would have to leave the Pacific Northwest. And that is something I did not want to do. And John, you live here. You know how beautiful it is, right? It's gorgeous here. Like, I love to travel, but I want to live here. And so when I decided I was staying here, I was like, well, shit, what am I going to do here? And so I looked around at my network, and that's when, and I had some friends that were working at King 5, the local NBC affiliate. And so I ended up working there as the director of business development, although my secondary title in the office was director of fun. And I worked on their lifestyle TV shows. They had three of them. And so I was there for about 6 years through the pandemic, and working at a TV station during a pandemic is a very interesting place to be. And then I decided to step away from traditional media about, I guess it's coming up on 2 years ago, and joined over working for a friend of mine, Dan Rogers, at Work P2P as the Vice President of Community Development. And that is where I'm at now.
That's awesome. How was King? I was always a King 5 watcher as far as the news side goes. What's that? I've always been curious about behind the scenes. Like, what is that? I mean, obviously they've got these giant cameras and they kind of give you whatever you want, but whatever they want you to see. But how was that? Did you work with the news side, or were you just doing some of the other shows? Like,
so the station, there was about, at the time I was there, there was over 200 employees. So there's quite a bit of people. And the office is located in the Soto neighborhood of downtown Seattle, kind of kitty corner from T-Mobile Park. And there are essentially three floors. The first floor is where the studios are for both the news as well as the last show, New Day Northwest. And then on the second floor, you have all of the news department and all of the local programming department, mm-hmm. along with some management. And then on the third floor is where you have the advertising folks, you know, got to keep the separation of church and state. But there was a staircase that connected the two floors that was open. So it did feel all very connected. And while my job was mainly in the advertising department on the third floor, my position collaborated quite a bit with other departments. And the marketing department was also like right on the same floor as the news department. And so I got around the station quite a bit, and I got to know quite a few people, I guess you could say.
Yeah. I've always been interested in that. Funny story. When I was, so I was working a full, I had a job for like 20 years, same employer for the most part. And I got to a point where I was like, man, I really need to figure out what I'm going to do because this job's not working. There's no growth opportunity. So I went and saw a career counselor. And one of the four jobs that they said I'd be really good at, one of them was a newscaster.
Really?
Yes. People who know me are like, yeah, I can see that. But it was one of those things that I never thought about journalism. I listened to a lot of journalism, but I've never thought, you know, I guess doing podcasting is somewhat journalism, but it's one of those things that was on my list of, it was like IT guy, entrepreneur, technician or something like that, the newscaster. And I was like, I'm so surprised by that one. That one just,
it's really interesting.
Didn't even register as something that I would ever think to do. So
I think behind the scenes the people that work behind the scenes that make the magic happen, they really are the unsung heroes. They don't get enough credit. It's a lot. Like, I don't know what it is now, but when I left there, King 5 was producing, it was somewhere between 12 to 14 hours of local new content Monday through Friday.
Wow.
That's a lot of content, right? That's a lot of feet on the street. That's a lot of attention to detail and fact checking. It's a lot. And so I just think that it's pretty incredible what that team there can do. And it was it's a legacy station. It's one of those stations where people want to work there because you know that if you work at King 5, like, your next step could be something big and national, especially on the talent front. Like, a lot of people that were anchors and weather people ended up going on to, like, bigger national stations.
Wow. So let's talk about your current job. You work for a company called Work P2P.
Mm-hmm.
And fascinating. I was reading through the website, and you guys look like you have a unique product compared to other marketing firms. So let's talk a little bit about what is Work P2P?
Sure. Well, Work P2P, we recently rebranded about a year and a half ago. So the legacy side of the business has been around for 30 years and was formerly known as point-to-point transportation. And so we focus on large-scale corporate clients and their parties and all the marketing that goes around with their parties, their conventions, all of those things. So anytime, let's say, Xbox or Microsoft or Starbucks has a convention or an event anywhere in the world, you could think of us kind of as like the Nordstrom of FedEx. We make sure everything gets there, it gets to the right place, it gets on time. We hang out, make sure there's no problems, and then we pull everything back out and get it back to where it needs to go, or it comes back to our warehouse. Mm.
So is that like all the state, like, for example, big, like, thing that has stages or?
Yeah.
Yeah, all of that.
Okay. There's a lot of stuff. So let me put it in perspective to you. When Microsoft does their Ignite event here in Seattle at the Seattle Convention Center, right? The convention is 2 days, but they rent out the convention center to set everything up for 2 to 3 weeks in advance.
Wow.
Because it's a lot of tech. It's a lot of build out, right? And so and that's just one example that I've been to and been behind the scenes, but there's a lot of different ones like that all over the globe.
Yeah. I remember going to Vegas because I was in the home security industry. I remember going to Vegas for the convention and I was there like a day before and walked the showroom before it was officially open. And I was just blown away at some of the stuff that people create. Like, one of the companies had like a two-story building in the convention center they built. Mm-hmm. And I was just blown away at how, I mean, you've got to ship it. It's got to be on a semi. There's no way that stuff fits anywhere else. Mm-hmm. So that's crazy. So you guys are you doing the whole, like, every part of that convention, all the logistics?
No, it depends. It's we work with individual clients, but like, we do answer that question, where's my stuff, right? That's the question that we answer, and we make sure people's stuff doesn't get lost or broken, and that and it gets there on time. And unfortunately, some of the brand name shipping companies, they can't make those kind of guarantees.
Yeah.
I just did a show we were approached by a company like yours. For me, it was a little bit easier because I'm in Miami and it was at the Miami Beach Convention Center, but it was the International Business Show, the Miami International Business Show. And I would say at least 80% of the booths and presenters and companies were not from here. Right. And I was thinking, I was like, this was, for me, it was a little, you know, so I went one day, I went the day before, I had like my wagon, I had like, you know, my backdrop, my retractables, my table. I'm like, but what about people that don't live here? And then I guess that's when, you know, a company like yours comes into play. Like, how do I get this and ship it? How do I make sure it's there? You know, I'm worried about the day before. One of the people that was on the speaking panel with me, they were like, no, my stuff's just going to be there. I'm just going to show up and put it up. But, you know, then I guess you're the in-between person. There you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is but on a bigger scale, right? Because
much bigger.
I mean, I had a convention and on the other side of the mountains over in Spokane. And so I just FedExed all my stuff over and then FedExed it back.
Yeah.
But you think about, we go to these events, these quarterly events, and think about all the logistics just for those. You know, I was thinking about that last time I was there, the screens, the projectors, the lighting, all that stuff. I imagine that the Chris is probably not sourcing everything locally because it looks like it's the same equipment everywhere. Yeah. So I imagine he's using a company to move that stuff around.
He's tried both. He's tried taking it off. And then I don't know if you remember the event where we had like the big LED screen that was really bright for everybody. Yeah. That one he sourced locally and he's like, oh, we're just testing out some new things. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a, you know, trial and error type thing when you start getting 100%. Into those.
Yeah, 100%. So you've done a lot of marketing when it comes to just growing like larger businesses. So most of the people that are going to be watching our podcast are smaller businesses. What are some of the things you've learned in your career that would help somebody grow their audience so that they can grow their business?
Sure. Well, I think I can answer that question. I think it starts with focusing on being awesome at what you do. And are you offering a product or a service that somebody really needs, right? There's a lot of people out there pushing products that people don't need. They might want, but they don't need. And so it's about figuring out what your niche is, and then listening and talking to that the people inside that niche and getting feedback from them. At Work P2P, we do these things for our smaller clients on the consulting side. So we have a couple different sides to the company, and they're called listening tours. And that's where we go out and we just ask a bunch of questions for people in their community. They don't have to be clients. They might be clients. They might be partners. They might be vendors. They might be customers or all kinds of people. And we just ask a bunch of questions to try to find out, like, what is it that you're really hoping to get out of this X, Y, or Z, right? And I think one of my experiences that I can talk about personally when it comes to small businesses is I launched one in the middle of the pandemic for myself. I'm a person that identifies as being in long-term recovery from alcohol and drugs. Or alcohol and substance use disorder is the correct way to say it, I suppose. And I have been sober almost 18 years. And as someone who loves pop culture and who loves lifestyle content, I was looking for a resource or a magazine where I could find content that related to my community. And every time I would look for it, I would find stuff, but it would be very medical or very clinical and didn't really, it's great for maybe somebody who's thinking about getting sober or who might be newly sober or who has a loved one that's trying to get sober, but it didn't really speak to me as someone who's been doing this for a while. So when the pandemic hit, I was just crazy enough and I knew just enough about WordPress and SEO that I was like, I think I can figure this out myself. And, but I knew that I was going to need a bunch of different people to contribute to the site. Not that I don't have great taste, fellas, I do, but I knew that there's a lot of different pathways to recovery. And I wanted people of all lengths of time in sobriety and all backgrounds to be able to contribute. So we just focused on providing really good content and then making sure that everything on the back end of the website was search engine optimized to the very best of my ability. I have not bought any ads in the 4 years that company has existed. I have not purchased one ad. I have not on Google, not on Facebook, nowhere. I've just focused on making really great content and making sure that the search on the back end pulls up. So when somebody is searching on Google or Bing or wherever they're searching, that it pulls up. Because here's the thing that people don't people get confused about when it comes to social media. They think, oh, I'm a small business owner. I need to have a Facebook. I need to have an Instagram. I need to have a LinkedIn. I need to have a Twitter. I need to have a Pinterest. I need to have a TikTok. I need to have this. I need to have that, right? You don't actually need to have any or most of those things. Because if you think about it, those sites are designed to keep you inside the site. They don't want you leaving their site, right? So I can tell you right now, the Sober Curator gets about 20,000 people a month to the site. Now, those are not big numbers, guys. Those are, when I worked at the King 5, we were getting 1 million people to the site a month, right? So 20,000 isn't a lot. But when I think about 20,000 sober people in a room, I'm like, high five to me. That's pretty good, right? When I look on the back end and I'm like, where are these people coming from? How are they getting here? 80% of my traffic is coming because they searched for something and it came up in search. Okay. 80%. The next 10% is from people that have come to know me and they're just typing in the website on their own, or if they've got it saved in their browser. The next 5% is for referral. So those are all the people that I do deals with that we're sending business back and forth. The last 5% is coming from social media, and that's all social media combined, right? So yes, have a presence on social media. Make sure that your branding looks tight and your contact information is there. It'll help your SEO and point it back to your website or point it back to your podcast, but don't spend a lot of time there. It's not worth it. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, first, congratulations.
I think that's
big. I wish I had 20,000 visitors on my website. And secondly, for our business owners one of the reasons, I'll backtrack just a little bit. One of the reasons that we do have a lot of marketing and sales is because a lot of business owners come from what they were good at, right? Like, I was a good engineer and a tech and IT person. So was John. And then we just gradually got into the business side. So there's a whole side of business that we don't know, hence here. So for those listeners that don't know, when you said that most of your traffic came from the website and Google searches, where do they go to get that information? How do they obtain that information? What's the best way to find those analytics?
Oh, well, so there's a lot of different places you can pull analytics. I tend to favor Google Analytics as my go-to, right? Google is a giant, and YouTube is owned by Google and is a giant right behind them. And so that is where I tend to get most of my analytics from. But there's a lot of different ways that you can do search engine optimization on the back of your site. And there's a lot of different types of people that you can do it. And there's a lot of different types of websites. Like, I happen to like WordPress, but I know people use other platforms. WordPress is just kind of where I've hung my hat for the last decade, and it's known, and I, you know, so I know how to get in and maneuver around in it. And they're always doing updates, and there's always 30 third party vendors that can help me with templates and design and things like that. So, you know, I think the world is changing so quickly with people being able to self-serve themselves for marketing, right? The PicMonkeys and the Canvas of the world make it really easy for you to make your own graphics, right? And here we are on a podcast. It's not that hard to have a podcast these days, right? Mm-hmm. You still have to focus on making it awesome, but the lift is easier. The expenses are easier. So it really comes down to the story. What's the story of your business? What sets you apart from everybody else? What's that? What are you offering? And making sure it's getting in front of that right audience. Right. Because over the years, I've put together all kinds of ad buys, like up into the millions of dollars. You know, I've sold Super Bowl ads. I've sold ads in a Super Bowl magazine. Like, I've done it all. And it always comes down to the branding and the message. Like, make sure your message is right.
Yeah, I would say one of my biggest mistakes early, before I rebranded my company to Truett, I had a local brand. And in IT, it's really easy to try to be all things to all people. And one of my biggest things was people just didn't know what I did. People had no clue. So one of the things when I rebranded my business to Truett, I dropped the residential consumer side. I dropped a lot of the not all of it, but a lot of the one-off work, and I went strictly business support, and just that was what I, that's what I talked about everywhere I went. That was my message. And I noticed while my leads, maybe like my within my referral group might be not be as much as it was, it's more what I'm looking for as opposed to a bunch of just random leads that don't, that were just like, hey, can you fix my computer? That kind of stuff. So definitely branding, man, and having your a clear message is super important.
It's really the most important. And, you know, I think the biggest switch in me joining the Work P2P team is our owner, Dan Rogers, does not believe in traditional marketing and advertising. So when we started, and I've known him for over a decade, probably close to two decades, but when we started talking about me joining his team, I was like, buddy, like, all I know is traditional sales and marketing, like, and you don't believe in it. Like, and he doesn't not believe in it entirely. He just thinks it needs to be put in the right order, right? Sequence matters. Right. And so if you don't have your message locked down first, like no amount of marketing is going to make it better. And the universe works on a pull system, not push. And so that's why on the small clients that we're working with, we really work with them to get their mission right, to get their North Star correct, to get the story and about what the offering is, and also making sure the offering is the right thing. Like, do people actually want it, right? Yeah. So you start there and getting the inside of your house in order before you push out to the masses.
Yeah.
Well, glad you mentioned that, because that's where my next question was coming from. For the average person, finding this message, is that something they should seek help for? Is that something that comes to people easily? Like, now that you're saying it, I'm questioning if I'm putting out the correct message on mine.
Well, I mean, yes, you should. I mean, getting help, but it doesn't, you don't, maybe you pay for help. Right. There's a lot of brand agencies out there, but maybe you just talk to your network. Right. And I got to tell you guys, like, AI is changing the game. It's changing the game. And there's so, if you understand AI and how to use it, it's still a robot. I understand that, but it compresses so much time, and it's all about the right prompts. You can go in and you put in the right prompts and you can say, tell me what questions I need to answer for you to help put together a branding message around my company XYZ, right? And then it'll give you a list of questions, and you go and you thoughtfully answer all of those, and then it'll start to push out information to you that'll help you really dial in your branding messaging. So there's a lot of cool stuff coming online, and it's changing so fast, it's a little overwhelming.
Yeah, I think the thing about AI that you gotta be careful about is just making sure that you have enough uniqueness in how you create those triggers to make sure you're not just this, making it the same.
Absolutely. But I'll tell you what, like, on the back end of my website, we have a bunch of widgets that do a bunch of scoring, and I'm talking about my personal website, not Work P2P. And one of the scores that it has is how much AI content is being used on a scale of 0 to 100. And as of yesterday, my site was locking in at 0, right? And I use a lot of AI, okay? But I don't just take the AI as it spits it back out to me. From there, I go and I edit it, and I put my voice back into it. It starts with my voice. Then the AI takes my voice and makes it better. Then it comes back to me, and then I put more of myself in it. So again, but what that does, instead of spending 3 hours on an article, I might spend 45 minutes, right? It's just time compression.
Yeah.
But yes, if you're cheating the system, or you're thinking it's a one button click, you're not using it the right way.
Well, yeah, I would agree. I use quite a bit of AI to write articles and write things. But I put a lot of effort back into making sure that it sounds like me, looks like, you know,
yeah,
looks like me and whatnot. And it was so funny too, because I think there's this fear that AI is just going to take over all of our jobs, especially in the creative news, you know, area. And I just don't see that happening. Here's my test of that. So in the back over here, I have a book that I co-authored, and I did a chapter in a book. So I spent a ton of time writing it, making sure it had my voice. I used, I only used AI a little bit for research and just a little tiny bit, like very, very, very little. I wrote 99% of it myself. So then I went back and I had AI try to write the chapter just because I wanted to see what it would do. And it sucked so bad. It had no personality. It had no touch. It was just, it was so bad. I was like, oh, okay. So we still, if you are able to make good content, there's still a lot of opportunity out there. And I think AI will be used just to help people save time. But I agree with you. I don't really see AI being something that's going to replace writers or replace, you know.
Well, it's not any different than when people thought the internet was going to take away jobs, right? I mean, you guys, this is just like, this is the internet or this is the plane or this is a wheel. Like it's that point in time where it's going to change how we do things.
Yeah, you retool.
That's it. Retool. And you retool and you recalibrate. And so I just think that instead of being scared of it, there's just a huge opportunity with it. But it does need to be used in the right way. Right. Especially when you're looking at journalism and the world of fake news and all of those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'll definitely minimize some jobs, but then it'll create new jobs. Right. The people that need to support the certain things that are now needed to run that type of infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So I agree. I agree with both of you there.
Yeah, that's so good.
You know, there's a really cool AI tool I'm going to tell you guys about because we're on a podcast and it's for podcasters and we're obsessed with it. It's called Cast Magic. And you run your audio or your video through after the episode's been recorded. And you put in all these custom prompts. And it'll come back and it'll tell you 10 different ideas for the headline, the show notes, an article, the YouTube notes, the metadata, the search words. Like, it'll tell you everything. And it has, we're producing, I think right now, 4 podcasts, getting ready to launch a 5th one. And so for us, a very small team of, you know, like 5 people using a tool like Cast Magic. Again, we still have to edit it and make sure it doesn't sound like a robot, but like it just saves us so much time.
And doing that, so for example, you know, we have a starter podcast, like our podcast is only, what are we, 4 months, 3 months old?
You're just a baby.
We are. We're literally brand new. So does a thing like Cast Magic, so say someone's wanting to start a podcast to help connect their business to that, kind of much like we're doing with Business Bites. Does Cast Magic help, like that metadata, all of that, is that what helps draw people towards your podcast?
Yes, because you have to understand, like the headline of your podcast is the most important thing. That's what's pulling up in search, right? It's the most important thing. So if it's something that people are Googling, your chances are people are going to find it. If it's something that nobody would ever Google, nobody's going to find it, right? Mm. Same thing with the show notes. That really matters. And some people don't have social media for the podcast, or they may not even have a website just for their podcast. And while that's okay, and you might still be successful because you might have some viral episode take off on Spotify or Apple or Audible or somewhere, right? The more places you have your podcast content available on the internet, it picks up into the search. And so those headlines and the show notes are super, super important.
Wow. Wow. Well, that's something that I'll be signing up for right after this.
Was going to be my tip. That was going to be my tip to you, John.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm already on the way.
Yeah. You're a quick start. I get it.
Yeah, that's for sure. There's a tool that can make things easier and better. I'm all over that.
And I can put you in touch with our podcast producer. She can answer any questions that you might want. That's the other thing we're just trying to do at Work P2P. We help a lot of people for fun and for free, no strings attached. And people think that's a little crazy, right? They're like, what, how do you get paid? You know? And it's like, don't worry about it. Like, we're okay. Like when it becomes clear that money needs to change hands, we'll talk about it then. But our approach is to start serving people and see if we can help them first before we even ask for any money.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Since we're on the subject, Elise, there's another software that is similar to that one that breaks the video up into clips. What's your take on those? Do those help?
Are you talking like Descript? What are we talking?
So right now we're done with this podcast. We upload it and it's an hour. Yep. And then it'll start bringing it up into clips and then transcribe it for you. And those are the clips you can use like on your social media and your reels and your shorts. So can you give us a little bit of take on that? How should business owners approach that or podcast people approach that? What's your advice?
Yeah, there? It's a great using the clips are great. Always use the transcription to put the words over the top of the video because so many people are scrolling and watching the videos without their sound on because they might be in an environment where they can't have their sound on. So it's really important to have that transcription over the top, but also double check it, right? Some typos are not going to be funny. Yeah. They could be very offensive. Yeah. So make sure to double check the typos because all of those services will let you go in and edit. But it's really great because you guys, you have to think about, we have entered disposable mentality when it, thank you, TikTok. Thank you, internet dating. Everything is a swipe mentality. So people's attention, you have like less than 30 seconds to hold their attention. And that's assuming they stopped long enough to even give you that 30 seconds, right? So you do have to kind of grab them with a punch. And so those short bite size, and you guys could have a lot of fun with bites, right? It's in your name. You could have so much fun with bites. Those bite-sized tidbits will definitely help draw traffic as long as you're in the right place. Like a podcast like this, those kind of bite-sized videos would work great on LinkedIn. Great on LinkedIn.
Yeah. Do you think that podcasting's,
oversaturated?
Oversaturated. Yeah, that's kind of the word I was looking for.
It's going to get there. It's not there yet. It's going to get there, but it's not there yet.
Yeah.
But I selfishly do wish I would have started sooner, but here we are, right? And I still believe that good content rises to the top. Right? Unless we're talking about like bloopers or something really like that where people, you know. I'll go ahead and admit something that's really embarrassing. I can't stop watching the chiropractor videos. There's something about the popping of the backs that I just like I like it, right? I just like it. And so now, of course, thanks to the algorithm, I get fed all kinds of videos around that. So
right. I'm hooked on the because I like aviation. I'm hooked on the videos of planes landing sideways in the wind.
Oh, sure. Oh, yeah. You know?
And so I get a ton of those. Those are like one of the algorithm things that keep popping up for me. So, and you do, they're really good at just you spinning that information over to you and giving you more and more. Do you think, okay, so here's my question. When should a person or business owner, you know, what have you, when should they look at a podcast versus doing maybe a social media versus YouTube? Like I don't think podcasting's for everyone.
No, I agree. But the best way to promote your podcast is to go on other people's podcast. Right. That is the fastest way you can grow your own podcast is by being a guest on other people's podcasts. Full stop. That's that. Yes, here I am. I think it is really dependent on the type of business we're talking about. Right. Cause like, I'm just going to make up something. If you're a real estate agent, and you try to go launch a real estate podcast or a real estate YouTube channel, good luck. Like, good luck. Not only is it not a great time to buy a house, but like, it's a very, very saturated industry, right? So that's a whole different kind of, you'd have to get really thoughtful around the messaging to make you stand out as a real estate agent. So I think it's very dependent on the type of business you are and the type of audience you're trying to reach.
Right. And I think that's true. I mean, even just being open about why we started Business in Bites, like I've had this idea for a long, long, long time about creating a business that, or a podcast that would allow us to attract and do not just the business conversations about cybersecurity that we're doing, but to bring in people who have life experience and to help learn together how to how to grow a business, because that's like one of the biggest things that I've had to learn over the last 7 years of being a business owner is like, how do you do this? Because it's not for the faint of heart. And so it's been one of those things that, you know, I also didn't want to be the nerdy. I listen to a lot of nerdy cybersecurity podcasts because it's my industry. So I'm listening to like the news, the top cybersecurity news every single day. I listen to a pretty, for the average person, pretty dry podcast. And we, I think both Amelia and I, when we started this, wanted to create something that was completely different from that. That somebody who's a regular business owner could listen to for a while, have really good content to help them out. And then they get the opportunity to hear some of what's going on and have a good topic that applies to them. Mm-hmm. Versus having, we have a lot of people who have really fantastic, nerdy, cybersecurity deep podcast. But we just didn't want to do that just because we wanted to make sure that we had something that would attract.
I'm not marketing to Truitt. Truitt's not marketing to AM3, right? We're marketing to business owners. So if we bring in business owners by giving them value with our guests, then, you know, we're kind of hopefully getting that audience going and starting to build momentum and hopefully the snowball effect eventually.
Well, I think that's really smart. I mean, it's like cybersecurity, but make it sexy, make it approachable, make it friendly. Yeah. Maybe sexy isn't the right word, but no, like, right. You know, like, and you guys, like, I think what you are onto and where I can see a lot of potential here is everybody needs cybersecurity, whether they realize it or not. Right. Like I was texting with John yesterday, my Sober Curator Instagram. I worked so hard to get it up to 10,000 followers. I didn't pay one follower. I worked so hard and it got hacked. It got held ransom for $25,000. Mm-hmm. And the first thing that I was like, I have arrived. They think I'm rich. Like I got really excited that anybody thought that I was that big of a deal. And then when I really couldn't get it back, I was like, and there's nobody at Instagram you can call. Right. And so I just had to start over. But like, I think about that with my own website, right? Like if my website were to get hacked, like I would be devastated. Right. So I think where you guys should pivot, where you're pivoting is go to where people in the cybersecurity world aren't, because everybody's going to need you, right? Yeah. Go to the people who don't know that they need you yet, or they're just realizing that they need you.
Right.
Trying to be the only cybersecurity guy in a group of lawyers, in a group of accountants, in a group of just anybody. Just be the only cybersecurity guy. If I go to a convention of IT guys and we're all IT guys and we're all just looking at each other like, hey, I do what you do.
Right. Yeah. That's what my boss, Dan Rogers, always says, go to where people aren't. That's why we're in shipping. Nobody wants to ship stuff, right? That's why we're in a warehouse. Like go where people aren't and do the jobs people don't want to do. And so I think that as you guys continue to grow your businesses and this podcast, there's a lot of potential for you to be reaching out and get like, maybe you become like, I'm going to be the cybersecurity expert for attorneys all across the country. Like I'm just making up a bad example, but like own something, own a niche that you just own better than anybody else. Right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Sorry, I got really excited there.
Yeah.
No worries.
That's what we want. That's what we're going for. Wow. Well, this has been a fantastic conversation. Because it's so fascinating, especially when you have somebody who's been in this marketing world for so long. I feel like I'm just getting started in it. Like I've had a business for 7 years and I spent most of my growth was all local chambers, being out in the public and having a business where everybody needed me or thought they needed me because I did computer repair at the time. So having to change to a different type of firm has definitely been a challenge. It's just been a whole, I've had to reshape how I think about business, how I think about marketing and all of those things. So this has been super helpful. And I'm super, super glad that we had you on. This has been a great conversation.
Yeah. Well, and here's where I want to make you feel good, John. Like, think of how much has changed in the last 7 years in the media landscape. It's from here on out, it's always going to feel like you're just getting started, because just when you figure it out, an algorithm changes or a new thing pops up. Like it is, you know, I was in newspapers when they were, and magazines when they're like, print is dying. I was at a TV station when they were like, TV is dying, because, you know, everybody's streaming and now you can't, like, people aren't watching, you know, Thursday at 8 o'clock, right? And so it's just everything's changing, but what's not changing is having the good message, having the good story, right?
Yeah.
So I hope your takeaway today is start there.
Yeah, I was hearing this too, you know, as we wrap up this interview. Who would have thought that one of our primary places where we get our content would be YouTube?
It's number one, like, right? It's the biggest search engine behind Google.
Yeah.
It's the biggest search engine. So you have to be on YouTube. You know how many people have podcasts on YouTube with no video and they're still getting watches, right? Again, make sure to have the transcriptions over the top, guys. But like YouTube, you got to be there. You got to be there. It's a giant.
We are. We're there. We're there live.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll go in and I'll do an audit for you, and I'll come in and I'll just say, hey, these are all the things you're doing right. Don't stop. And then here's some areas that you can step up your game. Yeah. Just some opportunities for growth, guys. Opportunities for growth.
I'm going to start using Cast Magic starting on this one, and maybe I'll do them all. We'll see. We'll make it happen.
Well, before we pivot, or while pivoting, I'd like to invite you into our next segment, just because we touched on AI, and that's what I'm going to touch on my next segment really quick for a couple minutes.
Yeah.
So let me go ahead and share my screen real quick.
That's a special, you have to feel special about that when you get to hang out with the cyber
team. I didn't know I was going to be. I'm so techie now. It must be the eclipse.
The browser can't access your screen. All right, let me try something else. Give me one second here.
Do you need me to share it?
It didn't like that. Give me 30 seconds, and if that doesn't work, then yeah, you can take it from there. Share screen. Let's try it again. Okay. All right, there you go. So this article, let's minimize this. How to protect your loved ones from AI scams and calls.
Oh, I'm so glad we're talking about this. I have aging parents and I am so terrified about this. So keep going.
Yeah. So, I got a question for you. If I'm doing something like this, is it better to read through it or discuss it and then get through the points? Give me your podcast.
I think go through the points and then make sure in the show notes that this link is in the show notes so that people can go and read it for themselves. But give the highlights.
Got it. Okay. So this is talking about if you get a random call from a family member. Hey, Elise, this is your great aunt, Vicky. I just got into a car accident. I'm bleeding everywhere. The ambulance is on the way, but I don't have any money. I don't know what to do. If you can go ahead and XYZ, you know, send me money, or just some type of taking advantage of you. So they're making it emotional. It's a close relative. They're showing you urgency. So they're showing you all these things that make all your senses kind of, you know, trigger and fire all at the same time. It kind of catches you unaware. So your decision making is a little hasty. AI is making this a lot easier for everybody. So people can doctor videos. People can doctor voices really well. One of my guys sent me an intro to the AM3 technology website from Joe Rogan. And I'm like, Joe Rogan doesn't know me. Joe Rogan didn't send me anything, but, you know, he was able to send me something like that. Sorry, ads here. So this article goes over a couple things that we should touch on, right? So the first one is, remember that AI audio is hard to detect. It's very, very difficult to know if something's fake or not. Right now, you can go to a lot of programs on the web. You can feed it 3 minutes or 4 minutes of somebody's audio, right? So if I go to your podcast and I grab 3 or 5 minutes and I feed it into a audio AI, I can get back something and I can tell it, I want Elise to say this. And then boom, I have a recording of you saying that. how it analyzed all your voice from the 3 to 5 minutes of podcast audio that I gave it. Mm-hmm. You know, so then they'll go ahead and do that. So one of the ways to get around it is hang up and call back. So if somebody calls you with somebody urgent, hang up and call them back. Now, if it didn't come from their number, but they were spoofing their number, now you're going to get the right person. So you get to ask the person, hey, did you just call me saying you got into an accident? You know, this, this, or that? No, I'm on my couch right now doing absolutely nothing. You know, I'm looking for Tom on MySpace or I'm browsing Craigslist. You know, whatever it is, whatever it is that you're doing. So, you know,
what you did there. I see what you did there.
So that's one of the ways to get around that. The second one is to create a safe word, right? With your close family, with, like you said, you know, your elderly parents or siblings or just anyone. Hey, the safe word is pineapples, right? Let's go to Kevin Hart for a second. The safe word is pineapples. So just anything that when you're having a conversation, you know how to trigger, you know, just a safe word. Like you're doing any other type of situation with anybody else. This other one says, ask what they just had for dinner. Right? It could be, hey, I just wanted to make sure this was really you. So can you remind me what you had for dinner last night? And make sure it's specific enough that, you know, it's going to give you an answer that you're going to know if it's being mimicked or if the person is fake or not. And, you know, that those are really the big pointers. But to understand that a lot of these things can be faked and it's going to trigger a lot of your senses. The first one's going to be like, OK, this voice sounds really familiar. Right. So I know it's somebody that I love and that I care about. And the second one is because of what's going on. Right. I'm in a car accident or I'm bleeding or emergency trucks on the way, you know, the ambulance is on the way. Now they're triggering all your emotions. And this is what makes you go. I'll give you guys an example. And I've used this one on some episodes before. My wife, she's an assistant manager at a credit union. So she had an elderly lady come in and say, hey, I need to withdraw $20,000. And protocol for my wife is to ask, are you being pressured into this? Is this type of scam? You know, let us know. We can help you. And the elderly lady's like, no, you know, I'm doing this on my own free will. Right? My own reconnaissance. 2 days later, the lady comes in sobbing, crying that she's been taken advantage of, right? But my wife's like, you know, just not, you know, I'll sit down, let's talk. But, you know, I asked you these specific questions in order to help you. So specifically to what you were saying, Elise, the elderly are definitely some of the people that fall for this the most just because they're not up on the new technology. They don't know what's happening. Yeah. You know, they don't have that security awareness that other people are having. So I'll go ahead and open up the floor and let you both chime in on this.
I'll say this. One of the biggest AI voice scams is actually a kidnapping scams. Yeah. Now, here's the crazy thing that AI can create a voice that sounds panicked. So they've had a number of people have their daughter or their granddaughter call them panic, saying that they've been kidnapped and they need to send money to X person in order to, you know, to get their kid back or whatever. And then they call their kid and they're like, I don't know what you're talking about. I never called you. Or their kid walks to the door 5 minutes later or something crazy like that. Isn't that crazy? Like, we live in this day and age where, like, literally you can grab, I don't even know how they grab their kid's voice, or they just basically just try to find something close enough.
Social media. And everybody's voices, everybody posts everything that they need to know. Social media is your social engineering hacking guidebook,
right?
If I need to know your dog's name, your birthday, I get it off your social media.
Totally. I also realize you know, ever get those hang up calls where, and I've heard of this, I don't know how accurate it is, but it would not be that far fetched that there are people just trying to collect information. You know, if you ever get a phone call and it's like open mic for 30 seconds while you're saying hello, anyone there?
Oh.
And then all of a sudden it just hangs up.
I didn't think of that.
I personally wonder if there's that data collection happening. I've seen, you know, don't read everything you see on Facebook, but I've seen posts about it in the past. But definitely AI is changing really quick.
Elise, what's your take on this?
Well, yeah, I mean, as you're reading this, what came up for me is someone who is, I am super public. Like, I'm on podcasts all the time. If you Google just even my first name and the word Seattle, like, I dominate the first three pages of Google, like Madonna or something. I'm not Madonna, to be clear. But like, so I'm very out there, right? And my voice is very out there. So it would be very easy for this to happen. And my parents could easily fall for something like this, especially if they can figure out how to look like the call is coming from my phone. Right. Yeah. So, and I need to talk to my parents about this now. I've had in-depth conversations with them on emails, on what to look for in emails for typos and all these things, because it's so easy for them to think that like something's happening with one of their bank accounts from an email and they think it's real. Like a friend of mine, her mother and father-in-law, like literally were like two clicks away from like losing a lot of money. Yeah. And so it's getting, there's so much of it out there and they're getting so good at it that these kinds of conversations are super important.
It sounds funny, but because I enjoy watching it myself, but I think one of the best YouTube channels to show your parents or grandparents is actually Scammer Payback. Have you ever heard of that YouTube channel? Scammer Payback. It's a guy named Pierogi because he likes pierogies. That's not his real name. Mm-hmm. He's out of Florida, believe it or not, I believe.
And where all good stories come from.
That is true.
Pretends that he's old people and harasses scammers and actually in some cases reverse breaks into their computers.
Yeah.
And it's fun to watch from a nerd perspective. But one of the things that his videos demonstrate is the tactics that people use.
So they're educational is what you're saying.
Yeah, it's really educational. It's fun to watch. It's hilarious. But when you watch that, you could go look through some of his content, pick a video, have your parents watch it and say, now let's pay attention to what these guys were trying to do. And a lot of times he'll break down the scam itself and what it is. Yeah. So there's a lot of those out there. There's a couple other YouTubers in that same group that are doing the same thing, and they break down the whole scam and tell you exactly what their goal is, how do they get you there, like all of that. And I think that we should, it's because that's kind of a fun video to watch, it'd be good to take that and show that to your parents and say, okay, it's a guy pretending he's an old lady. Yeah, that's kind of funny, and it might sound stupid, but here's the overall point. These are real scammers trying to convince this fake old lady to go drive to Walmart and give buy $1,000 worth of gift cards and send it to them.
Yeah.
Like, here are the things you need to listen out for. This is a real scammer literally trying to trick this person. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, it's Pierogi and not a real person. But, I mean, like, they get so much, and he's had conversations. I have a recorded conversation with a scammer who stole $60,000 from a client a couple years ago. I literally recorded the conversation with my phone, and it was the creepiest thing in the world. And they literally will just say, like, that's fine. If I don't get your $1,000 or $2,000, I'll trick 20 more people today.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'll make that money.
Did you see the movie The Beekeeper? That just came out with Jason Statham. Yeah, I know you saw it, John. So at least if you look at it, it's called The Beekeeper.
Yeah. Making a note.
Yeah, Jason, you know Jason Statham, the gentleman from The Transporter?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. So yeah, he's in the movie. So he kind of gets revenge on the scammers for an old lady that's in his life that she gets scammed out of her money.
In classic Hollywood,
it's entertaining. It's entertaining at the very least. Yeah,
scammer is like over the top. It is hysterical. Yeah. Like it's the scammer looks way more showy than real ones, but the messaging and the whole thing is pretty funny, and it's good. Like, you just, it really does show at the very beginning how easy it is. I was watching another video from a different group this weekend. How easy it is. There's a lady who gave away something like $700,000 in what they call a romance scam.
Oh, I've been catfished. I've been catfished, and I didn't lose any money. But it was definitely someone that I met on a dating site, and we messaged for like 3 weeks. And then eventually that call came of, I'm out of the country. I don't have access to my account right now. And I was just like, and I did cry, you guys. I did cry, because here's the thing, is they're really good at pushing those emotional buttons.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, I really thought I was having a connection with someone. I really did. Now, this was years ago, but like, I really did. And so, I know that that's been happening in the dating world for a very long time. So it's just happening. It's just happening everywhere. You just have to be really careful.
Yeah, definitely triggers. And, you know, you want to do something for someone you love, like you want to look out for them.
Yeah.
If that's, you know, where the feelings are at. And it's a shame that people are trying to take advantage of that.
Wow. Well, definitely talk to your loved ones about scams, because it's a real thing.
A real, real thing.
Cool. Well, before we go, do you tell us how people can reach out to you, how they can get a hold of you? And yeah, this is your chance to promote yourself.
Oh, sure. You can check out Work P2P at work, the letter P, the number two, the letter P.com. You can check out my personal website, elisebryson.com. And if you are sober or sober curious, you can head on over to thesobercurator.com.
All
but
right,
yeah, well, if you just Google my name, like, it's going to be pretty easy to find me, because I'm everywhere.
I'm going to look for Elise Seattle.
Elise Seattle. See what happens.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us today. It's been a pleasure. Very entertaining. Very informative. Hello. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Awesome. Thanks for having me. I was like, oh, what's happening?
Yeah. Thanks for being here. And we will definitely keep in touch.
Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks so much.
Thank you.